We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Well, in this episode, we're not exactly talking to retail's most fascinating leaders. We're listening to them talk to us once again. I'm joined today on this look back over this year by my co-host, Chris Stewart.
Hey,
Hi,
Bill.
Chris. How are you?
Marvelous.
By Jen Overstreet, the master of all things Retail Gets Real. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Bill.
And Sarah Rand. Sarah, thank you so much for being here to look back on a pretty spectacular year.
No friend, no colleague,
well,
no
you're a friend
favorite
of a colleague.
Person in the whole world.
No, but you've heard it so many times, that you might think I'm not being serious. So we decided that we'd take this opportunity as we close out 2019 to reflect back on some of our favorite episodes. Every episode is a favorite episode. Every episode we feature someone that we find very interesting, and we hope that you find as fascinating as we do, as they give us their perspectives about this industry. But these are a few clips from some of the episodes that we picked out that we believe you will enjoy hearing again. So we're going to start off with Jen. Jen, you have an episode that you particularly liked. What is that episode and why?
Yes. We've recorded dozens of episodes this year. Some of my favorites were recorded at Retail's Big Show 2019, which we're getting ready to have Retail's Big Show 2020. But one of my favorites that stood out from that recording batch was Chip Barg, who's president and CEO of Levi's, who really doesn't need much of an introduction. When we recorded this episode, it was just so fascinating because here's this brilliant business person. And during the course of the episode, we talked to him about reviving Levi's, you know, kind of reviving this 100-year-old brand and making it relevant again. But the things that stood out to me even more than the brilliant ways that he did that and approached that whole transition were the way he talked about how the company uses its values, right? Like how they stand for value and values. And so that was really one of the things that I think made this a standout episode.
So this episode was recorded at the Big Show, and the co-host for that episode were Steve Barr from PwC and our colleague, Ellen Davis, who is the president of the NRF Foundation. Let's take a listen.
So at the core of Levi's is this brand we all know and love, but is also a company grounded on profits with principles. Mm-hmm. Tell us why that's so important.
Well, I think it's become even more important in today's day and age as governments and NGOs just aren't fulfilling their true responsibility to societies. One of the great things about this company is we have a long history of what we call profits through principles, a fundamental conviction or belief that doing business in the right way is good business and consumers will reward you for that. So this goes all the way back to Levi Strauss himself. You know, 165 years ago when he started the company, the very first year he made a profit, he donated part of the profits to a local orphanage. And so we've had this as part of our ethos ever since the beginning. And in today's day and age, you know, especially young consumers around the world, they want to buy brands that represent a good value, but also that have good values. It's about value and values. And I do think consumers are rewarding us for the stands that we take, our commitment to sustainability, our commitment to doing business the right way. I like to say, we'll always choose the harder right over the easier wrong. And that's part of our moral compass. But it guides just about everything that we do.
Can you talk a little bit about some of those harder rights? So, you know, you guys have taken some tremendous important stances in the last several years, but also throughout the history of the company. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, as a follow-up, how do you decide where you want to lean in and how do you decide where, you know, maybe either the company's not ready or that's not a position that you really want to fight for? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and there's fairly relevant because it was in the news not that long ago. But when the Boy Scouts banned gay troop leaders back in the 1990s, we pulled all financial support from the Boy Scouts. And the following week, the company got 130,000 letters, 97% of which were opposed to the company's position. And the company did not waver. And now we look back on that, you know, almost 30 years later and go, we were really on the side of right. I mean, to the point where the Boy Scouts have now dropped the name Boys. And that's kind of part of the acid test for the positions that we'll take. It's, we're not afraid to stand up for things that might be contentious, might even be unpopular in the current environment, but where we believe that it is one of the bigger issues in society, we're not afraid to take a stance.
So, Jen, that was very, very good and very impactful. Chip Berg is a leader and has been recognized as such over and over again. But, you know, we talk about brands a lot and what brands are doing with customers and how they are differentiating themselves from their competitors. You have another pick.
I do. My next pick is Mary Beth Lawton, who is the EVP of Omni Retail at Sephora. And Sephora is one of those brands that's kind of setting the standard for how to blend the physical and digital experiences. They're just really innovative in the way they approach this. And during this episode, Susan Retta, who is the co-host for this episode along with you, Bill, she asked Mary Beth about how you align your teams and how do you actually, like, the nitty-gritty of how you actually work together to make the physical side of the business and the digital side, like, how do you really make that come true? And she's very smart about that. But the thing that I loved in this episode that we kind of forget sometimes when we keep talking about business and trends is the people behind it just are having fun doing this. They're kind of on the forefront of innovation. They get to play with these fun ideas. And Mary Beth talks about how she just likes the idea of thinking about how to delight the customer.
All right. Well, let's listen to Mary Beth, your co-host for this episode, were Bill Thorne. That would be me. And Susan Retta, who is the editor of Stores Magazine.
Tell us a little bit about how you keep your teams aligned, because you've got teams across multiple channels of business. How do they work together?
Yeah, a couple things. So, I mean, some of it is more the practical pieces, right? So as we became one team, we did things like aligning our organization and creating teams that span both channels. Certain teams that think, for instance, about the consumer experience across our channels, or doing our forecasting of the business across our channels, but also aligning incentives. So it was really important to me as I took on this role to make sure that everyone on the team had one goal, which is kind of overall sales instead of sales of their particular channel. So that was really important. But then beyond those structural pieces, it was also about creating kind of an attitude and a mindset around putting the consumer at the center of everything. We coined this term omnitude at Sephora, and it's this idea that, you know, we'll do whatever we can to delight our consumer wherever she is shopping with us. And then, you know, ultimately, we just want to make it easy for her to shop however and whenever and wherever she wants to with Sephora. So that's been a huge part of aligning the team, is just getting them to have this mindset of doing whatever is right for her in that moment.
Yeah.
What inspires you to push boundaries?
Yeah, I've always been a trailblazer, if you will. I love when there's not a blueprint and I can just figure out how to make something happen. So when, you know, this omnichannel challenge came, you know, a year and a half ago, I said, oh yeah, sign me up, because you know, I would argue a lot, you know, there aren't very few retailers that have figured out kind of how to truly do omnichannel in a consumer-centric way that isn't just about, you know, buy online, pick up in store and the transactional pieces. It's about really creating these personalized, seamless, you know, exciting journeys for consumers across all the touch points. And so what inspires me is the idea that I can help actually define that for retail and for Sephora. And, you know, hopefully others can glean something from it. But more so, it's fun to think about how to delight the consumer.
Yes.
Well, Jen, great choices.
Yeah, right. It's fun.
It is.
We sometimes forget, right?
Thank you for sharing those. So we have a few more to go. Sarah, you've picked a couple as well. And I noticed that the first one that we're going to highlight is Rothy's, and that Chris is wearing her Rothy's today.
I am. They're so lovely.
So that's pretty fantastic. Tell us, why did you pick Rothy's, Sarah?
So we talked to Rothy's over the summer, but that was not my first experience with Rothy's. I had a group of girlfriends, one of whom was the first person in that group of friends to have a pair of Rothy's. And over the course of about 4 months, I was left as the only person to not have a pair of Rothy's. which was an interesting micro example in my world of how Rothy's works. And then we had this conversation with Ellie, and as you'll hear, that's how Rothy's works, is that they have one person in an office, one person in a group of friends, one person in a class at school that has them. And then they are, I think she calls them customer zero, and it grows. And it was just so interesting for me to have seen it first and then have her say, yeah, that's how Rothy's works. And then, of course, after we recorded this episode, Bill was game to have Chris and I drag him to the Rothy's store in San Francisco, where we got to see firsthand the enthusiasm and the cult that Rothy's really has around it.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great conversation. Let's take a listen.
Can we talk a little bit about the store? I mean, you got your roots in the online space, and then you've opened a store. Why open a store?
Well, we are a San Francisco brand. So we have this tiny little jewel box of a store. It's about 300 selling square feet. So it's teeny weeny. And basically, it was an experiment to get closer to our customers. We wanted to talk to them, to listen to what they wanted to see, to test exclusive small run products in that space, to test event formats. It's been bananas. The line out the door, if you talk to anybody on Fillmore, there's a line out the door constantly because it's so tiny. But it builds this buzz. People walk by, they ask what it is. The customers are selling to each other. There's people will go in and take pictures of what we're merchandising in the window if it's exclusive, and then post it online. And it's become this really cool test ground for us. We also see that people are buying different top sellers in our stores than they are online, because they actually see our sales associates wearing certain styles. And so they can be a little more daring if they actually can see it on somebody live than if they are just seeing it online. So black is our bestseller online, whereas, you know, different color and pattern really pop in store.
Yeah. How much of there's really a culture around Rothy's, I think. And I see women who see other women wearing the shoes, and it's like, oh, you have those ones. Oh, and they like put their shoes next to each other and something. How much of that geeking out culture is because of the sustainability? Is it because of like the great social media campaigns? Like, what is it that is binding all of these women together over shoes?
This is such a good question. And it's something I've never seen before, being in this industry for, you know, now 12, 14 years. It's a combination of things, but word of mouth is our biggest driver by far. And I think it's a few things. We call it the head bob. So if you're in an elevator with another woman wearing Rothy's, you do this sort of like, you're in the know. You've got it, girl. Like, you know too that how great these shoes are, right? So there's that factor. And we find that our biggest penetration, our most dense markets, are markets where women commute, and they're often together in subways or walking. So DC, where you guys are from, is our biggest market as far as per capita. It's just really dense. Women see each other.
It doesn't.
Right? Women are working in offices. Yeah. We call it patient zero, where there's one really cool, stylish chick in the office who has Rothy's, and then everyone sort of around her starts to get them, and you can trace it back to one person.
Well, Chris, you're obviously one of those, cool, stylish chicks.
I am, and I don't really like the idea of following all these trends, but I just kept seeing people wearing them, and I'd be like riding behind them on the metro escalator, and like, ugh, there's another pair of Rothy's. Ugh, there's another pair of Rothy's.
It was neat going to that store, though. I mean, what a concept. It is, when she says teeny weeny, it is really small.
It's intimate.
But it was cool. I mean, we had to stand in line, and we were happy to do so. Mm-hmm. And once in, we were looking at the people behind us still standing in line. It was pretty cool.
And people were taking pictures of not just the shoes, but
the
merchandising
and like the rainbow in the window.
Yeah.
You know, you've also picked Lily Pulitzer, and that was, I really did enjoy that conversation with Michelle Kelly, and it, probably because it's a brand. I don't know many women's brands, but I do know Lily Pulitzer, and I do remember the whole story of where that came about. Well, why did you pick this one?
Michelle's enthusiasm is totally infectious, and listening, I got to listen in the room as you and Mary McGinty were talking about her. Mary also brings an enthusiasm to that conversation because she is such a big fan of the brand.
She most certainly is.
But Michelle just embodies that, how people look at the brand, and it was contagious.
You know, it was interesting because this is one of those episodes where I usually would like to sit back and just let the, you know, it's women's clothing, it's women's fashion, so let the women talk about it and I'll learn something.
You don't
from
know it. A ton about it?
But this is one where I actually participated. So it was me and my friend and colleague, Mary McGinty. So let's take a listen. No, Mary's got thousands of questions, so I'm going to try to get mine in early. You know, Lilly Pulitzer, I'm familiar with that brand. I'm not familiar with a lot of women's brands. That's one I'm familiar with.
Wonderful.
I think it's primarily, I grew up in the South, and I think during my period of time when I was in college, a lot of Lilly Pulitzer, a lot of sororities, and it was very in, you know, with the espadrilles and everything else. So I think that, so you've got a brand.
Yes.
And it has been able to transcend, you know, from way before that to that time to this time and still be relevant. How do you do that?
It is what we spend all of our time working on. You know, we all work very hard on that, you know, core key question. So it's definitely not, you know, a happy accident by any means. But I do think that some of the key fundamental reasons why the brand took off back in the 60s are still very relevant today. You know, the brand started because of this incredible woman who set out to improve her life and, you know, improve her health and improve her outlook on life. And in doing so, she created this brand and, you know, ended up creating this sense of fashion that really, you know, let her personality come through, which was fun and whimsical and confident and carefree, certainly, you know, optimistic at its core. And I think people still want those things. So while, you know, the fashion has changed, the time has changed, the way we deliver product to customers has changed, some of those fundamental reasons for why Lilly makes someone smile are absolutely still relevant today.
So when you just launched your For the Love of Lilly social campaign, you were hearing a lot of those stories, those very personal stories from a lot of your customers. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. I think, you know, one thing that definitely came through that was a great, and then the hashtag is still wonderful. It's a great thing to just, you know, pick up and read if there's ever, you know, a tough day or a tough moment at work, and there aren't many, but, you know, reading some of those stories is just, you know, the ultimate inspiration. And, you know, Lilly brings people together. The brand brings people together. It's why we celebrated our 60th anniversary not too long ago with a big party. You know, I find people, you know, hear stories of women who have gotten to know each other through social media, but have never physically met. They then make plans to meet and they're both wearing their Lilly and they're over the moon. So, you know, I think stories of Lilly, the brand bringing people together, definitely came through that contest. And, you know, in social media campaign, definitely, again, stories of someone going through some, you know, maybe tougher period in their life and then finding Lilly as, you know, a bit of ray of sunshine during a difficult time. That was definitely something that came up. And I would also say that, you know, it's about friendship and, you know, and really connecting people. So, you know, often there is a story. Of course, when I interview, I always ask what, you know, when they first heard of Lilly, and there's always a good story. I'd say more often than not, it is a story of a sister, a friend, a mom, you know, a daughter bringing, you know, introducing the person to the brand and then explaining to that person what the brand means to them. And then they're like, all right, I'll give it a try. We really do love all the great stories. It makes our, you know, we don't have the traditional marketing funnel that many brands will talk about. We have these stories of connectivity and community and meaning, which makes it a little bit more challenging, but so much fun.
So relevancy, that is something that we talk to a lot of the brands that have been around for a long time. And I think that the one thing that I really took away from that conversation was, again, to your point, Sarah, just the enthusiasm and the passion. It was a lot of fun. It was a fun one to do. So, Chris, I think that you have a couple of good examples of entrepreneurs. You know, we have this great opportunity to work on behalf of an industry that is full of entrepreneurs and innovators and really smart people that have great ideas and then put thought into action. You've picked out a couple. Tell me about the first one.
So actually, you know, both of the ones that I chose are small businesses. I have such a deep connection with small businesses. I love how they can just be out there in the field, connecting with customers, helping create communities in their neighborhoods, in their cities. The first one that I chose is the episode we recorded with Becky Waddell, who owns Take Care here in DC. It's a local shop that focuses on natural skincare and wellness products, everything from makeup and body cleansers and hair care to essential oils and candles and crystals. She started it several years ago to connect with the plant-based vegan community here in DC. And then she opened the store 2 years ago when her daughter was 2 months old, which Jen and I co-hosted that episode. And I remember looking at Jen when she said, oh, my daughter was 2 months old when I opened it. And Jen and I are both like, how can you do anything when your daughter is 2 months old except raise a daughter? But she has created this space that's almost the opposite of something she called the chaotic shopping, beauty shopping experience that people find in so many personal care stores. Take Care is just a peaceful and welcoming space. There's lots of windows, there's natural light, and people just really want to spend time there. And she's really found so many interesting ways to tap into those desires.
That's great. Let's take a listen.
What is wellness? What does it mean to you? And how do you translate that into your service?
Such an interesting question. I don't know if there's one way to define it. For me, it's wellness is like understanding and meeting your needs. And that varies from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And it might vary year by year, but it's really being able to identify the moments in your day that don't support you, finding ways to really get the most out of moments, whole days, your life, make it as enjoyable and soothing as you can. And for me, what is at the base of wellness is compassion. And my big ultimate hope is that by creating a space where we're concerned about wellness, well, that means we're concerned about reconnecting with ourselves. And when we feel connected and calm and accepting of ourselves, we're able to be that with others. And I think that's what the whole world needs right now. So when I talk about wellness, I'm meaning finding peace with myself and with others.
I was thinking about, you know, your space is so beautiful and I'm sure that you hear people walking into you. I just want to be here. I want to hang out here all the time. And that's, you know, these experiential offerings are ways to get them to come in and just spend time in the space. Mm-hmm. You had recently, or in the last year, tried a co-working space in the store. Was it in the back of the store?
Yeah. So I always say the upper level, and people are like, oh, there's an upstairs. And I'm like, it's just the little, like up three stairs at the shop. We just discovered that we had more retail space than we really needed. And we weren't using the space as efficiently as we could. So yeah, we hear people all the time say that, I wish I could just spend time here. It's so peaceful. And we thought that was a beautiful way to have people in the space during the day. And then in the evening, we used it as a class and event space. Mm-hmm. And that was called Work Well. So wellness-oriented co-working space. And it was lovely while it lasted.
And what happened?
We just decided that it was a fun idea. Mm-hmm. And it was a fun idea. And it wasn't the right idea.
Yeah.
We have customers who have been asking us since the moment we opened for facials. And you can only hear it so many times before you're finally like, okay, we've got to create this. Essentially, there is nowhere in DC. There are places here and there, but no one is creating the opportunity that people are looking for. And we're in the position to do that. So we have other fantastic co-working spaces in DC, and I think that our members will enjoy them. But it was really an attempt to use that space in a different and exciting way.
That was a great interview.
It was. And again, I'm just going to point out that she is such a great advertisement for her store because her skin was glowing.
She was.
She did not look like the mother of a small child.
No, definitely not. And I think her story's so interesting too. And it's so, even though this is a small business, it's so relevant to all everybody in retail, no matter how large your business is, because she's so close to her customer. She's so good at understanding what they need. And then also she's trying new things. And this is just a story of she tried it. It didn't pan out the way that she had expected. She changed course. And she changed course by listening to what her customers want. So I just thought it was a really great story.
That truly is the hallmark of a successful small business, or actually any business in retail. You listen to the customer and you provide what they want, and you will succeed. So Black Scintilla, tell us about that.
Black Scintilla is a boutique in Oklahoma City owned by Rachel Gruntmeier. Sarah and I had the pleasure of sitting down with her in the spring, and this was such a fun episode. Her enthusiasm and her energy are just so contagious, and she seems to be one of those, Rachel really seems to be one of those incredibly talented, creative, thoughtful people that can, that has so many great ideas and then can spin them into reality. And I especially loved her focus on inclusivity and helping people feel comfortable in the store and comfortable in their own skin, and that commitment to following what she says is the best advice she's ever received, which is don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun and enjoy life.
That's great. Let's take a listen.
I was thinking about your, you're talking about how you carry that wide range of sizes, and it's so important that there's a place that's a safe place for people who maybe felt welcomed in retail environments.
And we also do free hemming alterations with that. So while my shorties out there, we can help them. another thing that also I had never had this idea or, you know, never crossed my mind is the transgender community.
Yeah.
And so we've got some customers that don't feel safe in other environments. And I'm more than happy to close the store after hours. We'll schedule an appointment. They can come in. We can do a private dressing session.
Yeah.
Because that's got to feel awful and just feeling judged, and you shouldn't ever feel that. So, you know, if somebody's not feeling their best, let's do some after hours work. Do we need to go to your home? What do we need to do to kind of help you in the right scenario?
Yeah.
And that's also been really cool to see these women now start coming in during open hours. So I'm like, oh my God, look at your confidence. Like, you can literally see that happening and they're excited for it.
What's one product in your store that you were the first purchaser of?
Ooh,
that's a good question.
I also don't think I should say that. It's a bottle stopper that says cock blocker, and it's a big red chicken.
Rooster, probably.
It's a big red rooster that's a bottle stopper, and that was the first. Yeah.
Great.
I heart BS. This is why, you know, we have a good time in there.
Wow. Kind of takes your breath away.
I think I fell out of my chair laughing. So unexpected.
The rapid fire segment is always a fun, unexpected part of.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I really like, though, what she was saying at the beginning about appealing to all of her customers. Mm-hmm. And I think what makes her successful, and a lot of retailers successful, is they're not just listening to their customers. She's being who her customers need her to be.
Yeah.
And her brand revolves around their needs. Mm-hmm. And being reactive and being in tune is that's what makes those experiences so great.
Yeah.
You know, it is really a big compliment to her that she, you know, times change and you've got to change with the times. And she's recognized what she needs to do to help people as things are changing, as society is changing. And she's definitely on the cutting edge. And boy, that I wish I'd been... No, I'm glad I wasn't in the room. I don't know what I would have done, to be honest. It's rare that I'm at a loss for words. That would be one of those where you'd have to ask all the questions.
She did send us one of those. So if you would like to see it, I've got one in my desk.
I didn't know you. All right, we're going to leave it at that.
So, Bill, we've shared some of our favorites. What about yours?
Well, as I said at the beginning, I mean, I don't know that it's not easy to pick out a favorite, but if you think about Ed Stack and what he has done at Dick's Sporting Goods, and you think about the things that they are doing in the communities that they serve and their commitment to their customers and to those communities and to their employees, it's really astounding. And so it was really one of my favorite episodes to be able to talk to Ed about the programs that they do and the communities that they serve. So let's take a listen.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about as well with various retailers, even online retailers, the word gets thrown around a lot, communities, our engagement with the communities that we serve. Dick's, I'm sure, has a real strong philosophy. If you're in a community, you're a part of that community. What does that consist of?
Part of it has to do with what we're doing with the Sports Matter Foundation.
Sure.
What we have is the youth sports programs that we do. So if teams need equipment to run a practice, we've got these kits, whether it's basketball, soccer, that we'll give these kits to these leagues or these teams to be able to run a practice. So from a soccer standpoint, I think we have a bag. It's got six soccer balls. It's got, eight cones there, pennies, whistles, all of that. And we just give that away to so that they can run a practice. Because we really don't think anybody who wants to play economics shouldn't keep them from that. Because it's great. Sports do so many other things do also, extracurricular activities in school. But sports give you the opportunity that teach such life lessons they'll use along the way. So teamwork, commitment, responsibility, all of that. And if kids don't have an opportunity to do that, they miss out on a lot.
You know, it's so true that anymore, a lot of the school districts are having to make a decision because of tight budgets. A lot of the sports is kind of taking a back seat and playtime or playgrounds. And so for Dick's to recognize that, to come in and to take ownership is really impressive. And on so many levels, they have done extraordinary work. So the last one is our Riveter. And these two women were incredibly impressive. And we met them also at the big show in January of 2019. And they basically had an idea. They're military wives, and they created this company that allowed other military wives to become involved in the creation of a product. And what they have done is to build this business in a way that is driven by purpose, is driven by mission, and there's a little bit of patriotism behind it as well. So with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Shaquela Mims, we had the opportunity to kind of dig a little deeper with Lisa Bradley and Cameron Cruz, who were the two co-founders of our Riveter.
So it really began in creating a business model that the inputs and the outputs are all positive. So we, much like Rosie the Riveter, left her home to be able to go into the manufacturing plants to be able to help our country. Now we're taking that manufacturing opportunity back to the homes of the modern day woman. So we're able to have a community, have an opportunity for income, but also be able to have a family and a career. We believe that women should be able to do it all today.
Because we can.
Because we can.
I think too, we never stop to think about or think too hard about how big the handbag industry was, because that's too overwhelming. You know, we did it really one bag at a time, one military spouse at a time, one step at a time. Because if you start to think about the 10-year or 20-year game or the size of the industry or how small you are, it just gets so overwhelming. So for us, we just put our heads down. We started to get to work. So our biggest thing here was we wanted, beyond anything, to be able to provide opportunity and empowerment to the military spouses in our community. Over and over and over again, we realized that they don't want charity. They want an opportunity to make something for themselves. Lisa and I's job is to serve that group of women and to serve our company. So that to me is what giving means.
You know, they were incredibly inspiring, but the key is, and I think that if you're a regular listener to Retail Gets Real, you can't help but be inspired by people like Lisa and Cameron and all of the others that really do something because they're passionate about it, they want to make a difference, and they are making a difference in a lot of people's lives, whether the consumer, their employees, or their families, or the general community at large.
That's the point, right? I mean, we start every episode with you saying, though, retail impacts everyone everywhere.
Every day.
Every single day. And here, you know, every one of these examples, they're impacting people who, you know, it's hard for them to find work because they're a military spouse, or they are kids that don't have the funds to play sports, or they are from a community of shoppers that don't feel comfortable in some of the stores that exist. I mean, going back through all of these episodes that we've just gone through, there's so many different ways that retail impacts the communities.
Yep. And you think about it, we've done close to 150 total episodes since we started Retail Gets Real. And I think that we collectively at the National Retail Federation, every time we listen, every time we have an opportunity to interact with these leaders, it really gives us a sense of purpose and mission to continue fighting the good fight. So, Chris Stewart.
Bill Thorne.
Jen Overstreet.
Bill Thorne.
Sarah Rand.
William Thorne.
And this is Bill Thorne. Thank you all for your input, for your ideas, for your thoughts. Thank you all for making a
great program even better. And thank you out there for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. Please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.